Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man. Narrated by Dylan Lynch, with performances by Tony Penny, James Lewis, Ken Jackson, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Christopher Grayville, Laura Quinn Anderson, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, Eric Messner, David Coyne, MJ Casey, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, and James Konacek. Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, number 2, Deadly Trail.
Nearly the entire town of Cedar Creek had turned out to watch the execution. Some were there because they felt the need to see justice done. Many were there because of the morbid attraction of watching someone hang. One of the witnesses to the execution had walked up to Clyde Payson just a few minutes before they took him up onto the scaffold. Payson had not yet had the hood put over his head, so he could still see everyone in the crowd. When he saw the person staring at him so intently, he made a face.
What the hell are you looking at? Who are you?
Quiet Stream.
What? Your name is Quiet Stream?
You son of a bitch. You don't even recognize the name, do you?
Who is Quiet Stream?
Do you not remember her?
Never heard of her.
She is an Indian woman that you once raped.
I raped a passel of woman in my day, white and Injun. I even had me a few colors, but I never bothered to learn their names.
Quiet Stream was my mother, you son of a bitch, and I'm your son.
What? What did you...
Two years later, Walkback Ranch near Kuhara, Colorado. The single lantern put out enough light to illuminate the bunkhouse, showing not only the sleeping accommodations in four sets of double-stacked bunk beds, but also the walls, which were covered with newspapers and decorated with photographs and advertising posters. There were three men in the cabin, two sitting at a table playing cards and a third who was cooking something in a pot that sat on top of a little wood-burning pot-bellied stove. Pete, one of the men at the table, looked over at the man who was cooking their supper. Making a face, he waved his hand in the front of his nose.
What the hell is that you're cooking over there anyhow, Doomy? Smells like skunk.
Well, you don't have to eat it if you don't want to. You can always rustle up your own grub.
Hell, I didn't say I wasn't going to eat it.
There didn't nobody figure you wasn't going to eat it. You bitch about the food, but when the time comes, you're always the first one there.
Well, better than starving to death.
There's a lot of ways you might die, Pete. But from the looks of you, starving to death ain't one of them.
Hee-haw. Makes you wonder why Matt Jensen always finds some reason to go into town whenever it's your turn to cook.
He don't always go into town whenever I'm cooking.
Really? Well, it seems like he does.
Do you fellas know who Matt Jensen is?
What do you mean, do we know who Matt Jensen is? Are you saying he ain't Matt Jensen?
No, that's exactly what I'm telling you. He is Matt Jensen.
I swear, Shorty, you ain't making one lick of sense. First you say, do we know who Matt Jensen is? Then you say he is Matt Jensen.
Yes, he is Matt Jensen. The real Matt Jensen. The gunfighter.
No, he ain't. He may have the same name and all, but there ain't no way he's the one that's been wrote about in them dime novels.
Yes, he is.
Now, you tell me why Matt Jensen, I mean the Matt Jensen, would be working as a ranch hand for 20 and found.
I don't know. I just know it's the same one, that's all.
What the hell, Shorty? Are you going to gab all night or are you going to play cards? Are you in or out?
I'm in, I reckon. But I can't bet more on one match.
Shorty slid a match into the little pile in the middle of the table.
Whoa, one whole match? Well, I'll just raise you 5 matches.
Damn! What are you doing buying the pot?
It's called smart poker.
Pete took the match and added it to the stack of matches that were already in front of him.
What are you planning on doing with all them matches anyway?
Yeah, I thought everybody knew that already. What I aim to do is win all the matches in the whole bunkhouse so Doomy can't cook no more. Then we won't have to worry none about being poisoned.
Like you're worried. Don't you pay him no never mind, dummy. You know him. He'd eat the north end of a southbound mule while it was still walking.
Well, I hope he would, because that's just what I'm cooking.
What the hell you doing, Doomy? Did you taste some of your own food?
Boys, I've been shot!
My God! My God! What is it? What's happening?
Whoa! Whoa! Whoa!
Pete crawled over to the window.
Somebody's shooting at us.
There was no one left to hear, Pete. For when he looked back inside, he saw that the other two were already dead. Pete knew he had to get out of there or he would be dead too. The walls of the bunkhouse were so thin that they couldn't stop the bullets. The only protection they could offer would be to mask Pete's movement. Using that to his advantage, Pete managed to tear out a couple of boards from the floor. As soon as the hole was big enough, he crawled through it to get to the ground below the cabin. Whoever was shooting at the cabin did not realize that Pete had slipped away. Pete crawled back to the back of the building, where he stood and started running without looking back. Matt Jensen was on his way back to the ranch when he heard the shooting. Because of the effect of echoes, however, he couldn't be sure of the direction from which the shooting was coming. He climbed to the top of a large rock outcropping while the firing was still going on to see if he could find out. Then, far to the west, he saw the muzzle flashes. He knew that it was at the Walk Back Ranch, but he didn't know who it was or why they were shooting. Matt remounted and started toward the ranch. Within a minute, he met Pete, who was running in the opposite direction.
Pete, hold up. What's going on?
Don't go back to the ranch. Some madman is shooting up the place. He already killed Doomy and Shorty.
Yeah!
By the time Matt reached the ranch, the shooting had stopped. He swung down from his horse in front of the big house.
Mr. Kincaid! Mr. Kincaid, it's me, Matt Jensen. Are you in there?
Is the shooter gone?
Yes, sir. I believe he is. Is anyone hurt in there?
The front door opened and a tall, thin man with white hair and beard stepped out onto the porch.
We're all right in here. For some reason, all the shooting was directed at the bunkhouse.
Drawing his pistol, Matt moved through the shadows of the towering aspen trees, alongside the barn and finally to the bunkhouse, which was nearly 100 yards away from the main house. Matt approached cautiously. The windows facing the tree line were all shot out, and there were bullet holes in the wall. Because of that, it was easy to determine that the shooting had come from the hill beyond the corral.
Shorty! Doomy! It's me, Matt! Anyone alive in there?
When Matt didn't get a response, he moved to the door, but didn't go inside. Instead, he looked through the door and saw both Shorty and Doomy lying on the floor. The interior of the cabin was still illuminated by the lantern, and using the light thus provided, Matt was able to make a thorough inspection of the cabin, making certain no one was lying in wait for him. After satisfying himself that that was the case, Matt stepped inside the cabin, where he moved quickly to check on the two cowboys. He knew even before he reached them, though, that both Shorty and Doomy were dead. To Matt's surprise, both men, in addition to the wounds in their body, had very precise wounds in their forehead, as if the shooter had come into the cabin purposely to finish them off. That was when he saw a single 50-caliber bullet on the table in the middle of a spread of cards and a pile of matches. Wrapped around the 50-caliber bullet was a piece of paper held in place by a strip of rawhide. Matt untied the rawhide and opened the piece of paper. The paper had a name.
Matt Jensen.
Under the name was a very neat and expertly drawn bullseye symbol. Shorty Caldwell and Chris Doomy were being buried in a plot at the Walkback Ranch. Neither one of them had family that anyone knew about, and when Dwight Kincaid had asked the other cowboys what they thought about the idea of burying the two men at Walkback, they'd all agreed that Shorty and Doomy would probably appreciate being buried on the ranch where they'd worked and had friends. Cowboys and friends of the two men had come from adjacent ranches as well as the nearest town to attend the funeral. Everyone was wearing his finest clothes for the funeral, and they all were now standing alongside the two open graves, heads bowed, hats in their hands. They were waiting for Matt and Mr. Kincaid to join them. Matt was alone in the bunkhouse because all the others were outside. He sat on the edge of his bunk and just stared morosely at the floor. At the other end of the bunkhouse, the door opened and Kincaid came in.
Well, is it true you're planning on leaving us?
Yep.
Well, there's no need for you to do that, you know.
Shorty and Doomy are dead because someone came after me. I have no right to put others in danger like that.
Well, you don't know the shooter was after you.
My name was the only name the shooter left.
Well, do you have any idea who it might be?
No.
I'll be honest with you, Matt. When you first came here, I went into town to ask the sheriff about you. He said you have a sterling reputation, that you never killed anyone who didn't need killing.
That's right. But it turns out that those people all seem to have brothers or cousins or fathers or sons who want revenge. I have no idea who this was. I suspect it's someone bent on revenge. And people like that don't always care who gets in the way. No, sir. I think it'd be better if I moved on.
All right. I hate to see you go, but I can see your point. You're a good man, Matt. As fine as I'd ever know.
I appreciate that, Mr. Kincaid. Now, I reckon it's time to say goodbye to my friends, living and dead.
It had been 2 weeks since Matt left Walkback Ranch, and since he had no particular place to go and no need to be there, he was enjoying going nowhere. He killed a rabbit and spitted it over an open flame to cook for his supper. Then, during supper, he realized he was being watched. Slowly, showing no sign that he even knew that anyone was out there, Matt threw sand on the fire to extinguish it. Then, with the fire out, he spread his bedroll as if he were about to go to bed, being careful to place his boots at the foot of the bedroll and his hat at the top. Matt crawled down into the blanket. He lay there for a moment, then, in the darkness, silently rolled away and slid down into a small gully that ran nearby. Pulling his pistol, he cocked it, inched back up to the top of the gully to stare through the darkness toward the bedroll, using a technique of night vision he had learned from his mentor, Smoke Jensen. He waited. It was almost a full hour after Matt had gone to bed. Matt saw dust and bits of cloth fly up from his bedroll where a charge of buckshot tore into it. Had he been there, the impact debris would have been bone and flesh rather than dust and cloth, and he would be a dead man.
Oh, you son of a bitch! You're a smart one, you are!
The voice was not near the muzzle flash, and Matt knew that his would-be assailant must have fired and moved. Whoever this was, he was no amateur. And as Matt thought about it, he realized that the assailant could use the flame pattern from his own pistol as a target. Though none of the pellets hit him, they dug into the earth where he had been but an instant earlier and sent a spray of stinging sand into his face. Who was it? Who was after him? Matt moved his bedroll for the remainder of the night, but the next morning he returned to his original campsite and took a look around to see what he could find. He found where the assailant had waited and saw two expended 12-gauge shotgun shells. Then he found something that he had seen before. It was a 50-caliber bullet around which was wrapped a piece of paper held in place by a strip of rawhide. Opening the paper, Matt again found the bullseye symbol and his name.
I'll give you this. You are a persistent bastard, aren't you?
Putting the bullet in his pocket, Matt walked back over to Spirit, remounted, and continued on his way. Coming to a road, he saw a little sign pointing to the east. The sign read, Kuhara.
Kuchara! What do you think, Spirit? Might be good for us to live in town for a while.
Matt Jensen had been in town for almost 2 months now, staying in a rented room at Emma Foley's boarding house. When Mrs. Foley learned who he was, she was concerned at first, but as she told Reverend Nathan Sharkey, pastor of the Kuhara Baptist Church, she couldn't ask for a better guest. He was polite, always paid his dues, and helped out when he could. He was also deadly as a rattler on peyote. Matt, who was a tall, broad-shouldered man with ash-blonde hair and piercing blue eyes, was well known for his acumen with a gun. What many did not know was that he had learned his deadly skills from the legendary Smoke Jensen, a man whose exploits had been celebrated from coast to coast.
How many do you think are faster than I am?
It doesn't matter how many are faster.
What do you mean it doesn't matter how many are faster?
It doesn't matter. There may be some who are faster. There probably are some who are faster. But you've now reached the point where neither the speed of your draw nor your accuracy in shooting is in consideration.
What is?
I've held this for last, man. What I'm about to tell you is the final secret of the gunfighter. And I'm sorry to say, it's a terrible secret.
Well, what is the secret?
At this level, being fast or accurate is not the differing factor. At this level, everyone is fast and everyone is accurate, but not everyone is willing to kill.
What?
The average man will pause, hesitate for just a heartbeat, before he pulls the trigger for the shot that he knows is going to kill. In a situation like that, the victory goes to the man who will not hesitate.
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean.
I hope you do see. Because being able to see and understand that will keep you alive.
How do you overcome it?
You'll have to think about it every day. I want you to know that if you have to do it, you can kill a man without a second thought.
All right.
There's one more thing I want you to remember.
What is that?
Matt, you now have an awesome power. You have the power of life and death. Only God and the righteous should ever have such power. You aren't God. So that means you have to be righteous. Be a knight, Matt. Never abuse this power you now have.
I won't.
Swear to me, Matt. Swear on the graves of your ma and pa that you will be a knight.
I swear to you, Smoke. I will be a knight.
It had been a long time now since Matt had that conversation with Smoke, but the essence of it had stayed with him all through the years. Not once in the many deadly gunfights in which he had engaged had he been the aggressor. Every man who had fallen before Matt Jensen's gun had precipitated the event. At this moment, Matt was lying on his bed in his room at Mrs. Foley's boarding house with his hands laced behind his head. Then, realizing that it was about supper time, Matt got up from bed, poured water from a pitcher into a basin, washed his face and hands, and went downstairs to the dining room. The other guests were just coming into the dining room as well. Mr. and Mrs. Simmons and their 11-year-old boy, Kevin. Clarence Poole, who worked in the dry goods store, and Eamon Withers, a druggist in the town's only apothecary. Mrs. Foley came into the room then, carrying a large platter of biscuits.
I hope you folks have an appetite tonight. I seem to have gotten carried away. I cooked way more than I should have.
Mrs. Foley, it's impossible to be around anything you cook and not have an appetite.
Oh, you do know how to flatter a woman.
Oh, certainly look good, Mrs. Foley.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, Mr. Withers, I got a letter from my son in San Francisco today. He told me to give you his best. He still says he is a doctor because of you.
Oh, nonsense. Dr. Foley is a wonderful physician and would be whether or not he'd ever met me.
Still, I think being around all the wonderful medicines, potions, and nostrums that you keep in your store had a great influence on him. Mr. Jensen, can I ask you a question?
Yes, of course.
Is it true you killed your first man when you were my age? Kevin! What a terrible thing for you to say to Mr. Jensen.
That's all right, Mrs. Simmons. I'll answer him. No, Kevin, it isn't true.
Oh.
When Matt went to bed that night, he thought about the question Kevin had asked him. Matt wasn't 11 when he killed his first man. He was 9. Sangre de Cristo Mountains. It was cold, and the campfire they had used to cook their food and make their coffee was also providing warmth. Seven men were sitting around the fire, eating their supper of beans and staring into the dancing flames. Using his hat as a heat pad, Boone Parker reached out over the fire to take the coffee pot from its perch on a little metal frame. He poured himself a cup, put the pot back.
What the hell? What'd you make this coffee with, Taylor?
I got the water from a pond back a ways. It might be a little brackish.
Brackish? It tastes like horse piss.
Damn, Boone. You drunk a lot of horse piss, have you?
Very funny. Now, let's get back to business. Do any of you have any questions?
We're going to rob the bank in Cuchero. What's there to question?
I just want to make certain that everyone understands what they're supposed to do.
Oh, come on, Boone. It ain't like we're planning some battle or something.
Yes, it is. It's exactly like planning a battle, and don't you forget it. Now, you, Strayhorn, Hennessy, and I will go inside the bank. Taylor, you, Teach, and Clay will stay outside holding the horses.
The hell you say? You brought me into this because of my gun.
Rufus Clay was the youngest of the group. He tossed a twig into the fire, then looked up at Boone.
I don't plan to be no horse holder.
Use your head, Clay. If there's gonna be any shooting, it's more than likely gonna take place outside. If someone gets word of what's going on, we could have the whole town turning out on us before you know it. Now, you've heard about what happened back in Northfield, Minnesota, when the James and the Youngers tried to hold up their bank?
That ain't going to happen here.
I know it isn't, and I'm counting on you to see that it don't happen.
Now, what about Matt Jensen?
Matt Jensen? What about him?
I heard he was living in Cuchara right now. What if he gets word of what's going on?
Don't you be worrying none about Matt Jensen.
Clay stood up and in a lightning draw had his pistol in his hand.
God damn it, Clay! What you wanna do? Put us a foot here?
I was just giving you a demonstration as to why you don't have to worry none about Matt Jensen. I'd welcome the opportunity to go up against him.
Would you now?
Yeah, I would. You seen what I did with that tin can, didn't you? Hit it with all three shots.
Yeah, I seen. But what I didn't see was that can shooting back.
Maybe you want to take me on.
No, I don't want to take you on. As a matter of fact, I don't want anything to do with any of this. If I'm going to take a risk in robbing a bank somewhere, then the bank's going to have to be big enough to make it worthwhile. I doubt there's more than $5,000 in this bank.
$5,000 is a lot of money.
It ain't a lot of money if you're dead.
Look, Strayhorn, if you don't want to be a part of this, why don't you just ride on out of here?
Yeah, we don't need no cowards riding with us.
Strayhorn glared at Clay for a long moment before he spoke.
All right, I'll just get my gear and ride on out of here.
I thought Strayhorn was a big, brave outlaw. Did you see how I...
Did you kill him?
If I didn't, I will.
Strayhorn drew the club back for another blow. Strayhorn saw that Boone had a gun in his hand pointing at him.
I don't want him killed. I may need him.
If you're having to depend on him, all I can say is you are in bad shape.
Well, I expect you had better get on, then.
Don't worry. I don't want no part of this. Are any of you going with me?
Yeah, I'll go with you.
All right, Teach.
Strayhorn looked down at Clay.
I won't kill the son of a bitch, but I'll expect you to keep him from coming after us.
He won't be coming after you. Well, not till after we pull this job, anyway.
Fair enough. Come on, Teach, let's go.
The two men saddled their horses, then rode off into the night.
That son of a bitch hit me from behind, didn't he?
Yep.
Why, that son of a...
Clay reached for his gun, but his holster was empty.
What the hell? Where's my gun?
I've got it.
Give it back to me.
Not yet. Not until they're far enough away that I know you won't be going after. And we're going to go rob a bank. And you're going to make certain that Matt Jensen don't interfere. After that, if you're still alive, you can go after Strayhorn all you want.
If you're still alive, that's pretty good.
Don't you be worrying none about that. I tell you true, if I ever get a chance to go up against Matt Jensen, he'll be the one that's dead.
Let's get back to talking about the bank. When do we hit it?
Not for a couple days. Now, I want to go into town and check it out first. I figure I'll do that tomorrow.
Good. I'd like to go into town and get myself something to eat other than beans. Maybe even have a pretty girl serve me a whiskey.
Yeah, hey, I'm afraid you're going to have to put that off for a while, Hennessy.
What do you mean? I thought you said we were going into town tomorrow.
Well, not all of us. If we all ride in together tomorrow and then ride in again together the next day, some folks might find that a little strange. so I'm only going to take one person with me tomorrow.
Well, then take me.
No, I'm taking Clay. I need him to get a good look at the lay of the town. If folks do get wind of what's going on and come after us, I want Clay to know where they'd most likely be.
Can I have my gun back now?
Boone handed the pistol back to Clay.
Clay, I want you to pay particular attention to anywhere they might be able to set up an ambush.
You don't have to tell me how to do my job.
The next evening, Matt walked from the boarding house down to the saloon to have an after-dinner beer and see if he could find a card game that would hold his interest. He stepped up to the bar and slapped a silver coin down in front of him.
Hello, Matt. How are you this evening?
Doing fine, thank you, Paul. Any good card games going?
One back there in the corner. No opening right now. But I think I heard Kevin say he was about to leave. Kevin! Mr. Denson's looking for a chair in a game. Let him know when you leave, will you?
I'm in no hurry.
Well, no problem. Just a few more hands and I'm going to have to leave. I promised the missus.
Believe me, she has him on a leash. If he don't leave, why, she'll just jerk him out of here. I thought you were going hunting.
I'm going out first thing in the morning.
Is Mrs. Foley going to take care of the deer if you get one?
I got a deal with Jason Cumby over at the Mountain View Cafe. I kill it, dress it, he'll store it and cook it.
Can't beat that.
At the opposite end of the bar stood a slender young man with dark hair and dark eyes. There was a gracefulness and economy of motion about the way he walked and moved. The man had been watching Matt in the mirror, thinking that he had the luxury of studying Matt without himself being studied. In fact, quite the opposite was true. For although Matt had not looked directly at him, he already knew a lot about him. He knew that the man was wearing a quick-draw holster that hung low on the right side of a bullet-studded belt. In the holster was a Colt 44, and he knew, with the intuition of a survivor, that this man meant trouble.
Hey! You!
Matt didn't turn toward him.
I'm talking to you, mister!
Matt looked around. The man at the other end of the bar was wearing a low-crowned black hat with a silver hat band. The expression on his face was one of pure evil. But Matt had seen such expressions before, and this one neither surprised nor frightened him. He raised his beer mug toward the man in a silent salute. He did that, all the while knowing that the man was not addressing him by way of a simple greeting.
I heard you were here in Kuchara. That's why I came here.
Really? Do we know each other?
No, we don't know each other.
I see. So you just wanted to meet me, is that it?
In a manner of speaking, that's it. Though, truth to tell, there ain't going to be no time for us to have what you might call a real friendship.
What's your name?
Rufus Clay. But you probably heard of me as Ruthless Clay.
No, can't say as I have.
You're lying. I know damn well you've heard of Ruthless Clay. Anyone who's ever read a paper knows about Ruthless Clay.
Now that you remind me of it, perhaps I have heard of you.
Clay nodded, his smile actually broadening in appreciation of the recognition.
Well, I'm glad you've heard of me, because I've got a bone to pick with you, Mr. Matt Jensen, Mr. Famous Gunfighter.
Mr. Clay, I have a feeling we're getting off on the wrong foot here. Why don't you let me buy you a drink?
Uh-uh. Buying me a drink ain't going to do it. You'd like for me just to have a drink and go away, wouldn't you? You'd like me to just quake in my boots, because I'm in the presence of the great Matt Jensen.
What is it, mister? Where are you going with this?
You know where this is going.
Matt didn't answer.
You really haven't heard of me, have you?
No, I haven't.
That's what I thought. Everyone has heard of Matt Jensen, but nobody has heard of Ruthless Clay. Well, I intend to change that.
How? By getting yourself killed?
Draw, Jensen! Damn, you're good. I thought I could beat you. I really thought.
Looks like I'm gonna need a refill, Paul. Shooting people always makes me thirsty.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Nobody even noticed when Boone Parker left the saloon. He knew now that it was a mistake to bring Clay into town. All Clay had been able to talk about was his hope that he would have the opportunity to go up against Matt Jensen. Well, the fool got his chance. And he got himself killed. Boone had brought Clay into the group because Clay was very good with a gun. He knew it was a risk, even from the beginning, because Clay was also an arrogant and exceptionally vain man. His arrogance was predicated entirely upon his skill with a gun, though, because in Boone's mind, there wasn't anyone in his group who wasn't a superior man. The irony was Matt Jensen was not going to even be a problem. Boone had heard Jensen say that he would be leaving on a hunting trip at first light in the morning. That meant that Boone and his men could come into town, rob the bank, and be gone without worrying about any interference from Matt Jensen. He wouldn't even need Rufus Clay. The more he thought about it, the more he realized that Matt Jensen had actually done him a favor. This way, he wouldn't have the arrogant and volatile little son of a bitch to deal with. And best of all, he wouldn't have him to share the take with. Everyone's cut of the pie from the bank robbery just got bigger. When Matt returned to the boarding house, he was met by Mrs. Foley.
Are you all right?
You heard?
Everyone has heard.
I'm sorry about all this. I know it's not the kind of notoriety you want from one of your boarders.
Oh, don't be silly. I know it couldn't be helped.
Thank you for understanding.
Oh!
Mrs. Foley handed an envelope to Matt.
I don't know how this got here or where it came from, but I found it in front of the door this evening. But it has your name on the envelope.
Thank you.
Matt didn't open it until he reached his room. When he did open it, he removed a single 50-caliber bullet with the piece of paper held in place by a strip of rawhide. He knew what he would see, even before he unwrapped the paper.
Matt Jensen.
And there under the name was the ominous bullseye symbol. But this time, there was also a short letter.
I'm glad you were not killed tonight. I am reserving that privilege for myself. Well, son of a bitch.
Clouds, heavy with the promise of snow, clung to the tops of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains and drifted west toward Cujara, Colorado. Despite that, or perhaps because people wanted to beat the impending storm, business was brisk. Wagons and buckboards moved up and down High Street, and bundled up pedestrians, their breath form and vapor clouds, moved quickly along the boardwalks. Mrs. Emma Foley nodded in response to greetings from a couple of strollers as she stepped into the bank. The bank was empty except for one employee, and he was standing by the little pot-bellied stove taking in the warmth. He looked up and smiled as Mrs. Foley stepped through the door.
Good morning, Mrs. Foley. What brings you out on a cold, dreary day like this?
Good morning, Mr. Meade. I got a letter from my son yesterday, and he sent me a draft drawn on a bank in San Francisco. I'm just wondering if there will be any difficulty in depositing it.
I'm sure there will be no problem at all. I'll be glad to take care of that for you. How are you getting along?
Oh, just fine, thank you. I have a wonderful group of people staying with me now. They keep me from being lonely, now that Mr. Foley is gone.
I don't believe you'll ever have to worry about being lonely, Mrs. Foley. Not in this town, anyway. Why, you've got dozens of friends all over.
Meade accepted the draft from her and started filling out a deposit slip.
I suppose you heard about the little fracas in the saloon last night involving one of your guests?
Yes, you are talking about Mr. Jensen. He came to tell me about it himself last night. He said he wanted me to hear it from him before I heard it from anyone else. It was self-defense.
Oh, yes, it was that, all right. There's nobody questioning that. Matt Jensen had no choice. The other fella drew on him.
Poor Mr. Jensen feels terrible about it.
No need for him to feel bad about it. He was in the right. Will you be wanting any cash back?
No, just deposit it all to my account.
Very good.
Suddenly, the front door of the bank was thrown open and three men, all wearing masks and carrying pistols, rushed into the room.
Get your hands up! This hold up!
Ah!
You!
The robber pointed at Meade and threw him a cloth bag.
Fill this bag with money!
As a nervous Meade began complying with the bank robber's request, Mrs. Foley stared at the three robbers.
What are you looking at, old woman?
I know you.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. And I know you, too. The two of you worked for my husband one summer. You are Boone Parker, and you are Al Hennessy.
Damn you!
Ow!
What about him? He hurt her.
No, I never seen you before.
Meade handed a full bag of money to Boone.
Here, take your money. I filled it up. I won't say a word, I promise.
I'm sure you won't.
Oh, let's get out of here.
The three men ran out of the bank, then leaped up onto horses that were being held by a fourth man. They galloped out of town. Matt Jensen, totally unaware of the tragic events that had just taken place in town, was in the nearby hills setting up for his deer hunt. Matt knew how sensitive a deer was to a strange scent, and that a male deer would always go downwind to check for danger. So he was positioned crosswind to the buck's line of travel in order to avoid detection. Matt knew also that the buck would try to stay in cover as much as possible. So he found an area that he felt sure the buck would use. Then, leaving that area for the deer, he got out of sight and waited. The leaves and branches of the low-limbed trees at the edge of the forest across from where Matt had set up were waving gently in the wind. But buried within that sea wave of vegetation was a movement in the opposite direction, a movement against the wind. Even though Matt could not see the deer, he knew where it was, tracking him by the gentle movement of the branches as surely as if the deer were in plain view. Then the deer appeared. At first, only his nose sticking out from the bushes, nearly invisible as it sniffed for any sign of danger. Then the head stuck out, and the deer looked all around it. Finally, the entire deer stepped out into the open, sniffing the wind, assessing the danger by smell and sight. It was a magnificent 8-point, whose majesty was only rivaled by Matt's extreme desire to put a gaping hole through its heart. It was several hours after the robbery when Matt Jensen rode into town with the deer slung across his horse in front of him. He headed straight for the Mountain View Cafe, where he had an agreement with the owner to store and cook for him any game he brought in. There seemed to be a lot of activity in the town, and Matt wondered what had everyone so agitated, but he didn't ask. Instead, he rode around to the back of the cafe, dismounted, and was pulling the deer off when Jason Combe stepped outside.
That's a nice one.
He is a pretty good one.
Did you hear?
Hear what?
The bank was robbed. Robbers killed Frank Meade and Mrs. Foley.
Did you say they killed Mrs. Foley?
Yes. She was in the bank at the time of the robbery. Apparently there were only two there. Mrs. Foley and poor Frank Meade.
Why would they shoot a helpless old woman?
Seems she recognized two of them. So they shot her to keep her quiet. Only she didn't die right away. She lived long enough to tell the sheriff who did it.
Who was it?
There were four of them, but she only named two. Boone Parker and Al Hennessy.
I don't know either one of them.
You wouldn't. They cleared out of here a couple of years ago. They did odd jobs, worked for Mr. Foley for a while. But they were always in trouble, what with fighting, getting drunk, destroying public property and the like. Sheriff had them in jail about as much as out.
Is he going after him?
Yes.
I want to go too.
He figured you would. He asked me to send you down to see him as soon as you got back in town.
Matt made a gesture toward the deer.
Leave the deer. I'll take care of it for you. I want those sons of bitches caught too.
Thanks.
There were four of them.
Sheriff Craig spoke to Matt.
There would have been five, but you killed one of them.
I beg your pardon?
More than half a dozen men have told me that Boone Parker come into the saloon with Rufus Clay yesterday. I figured Clay pushed you into that fight to get you out of the way so they'd be able to rob the bank today.
Could be. Since I'd never met the man, I couldn't figure out what put the burr under his saddle.
I'm hoping that you'll take a hand in finding them.
Absolutely. They killed Mrs. Foley. I definitely want to find them.
Good. I was hoping you would feel like that. I've got more than a dozen men volunteering to be in that posse, but I want you to lead it, if you will.
No posse.
What?
I'll go after the men for you, but I don't want anything to do with a posse. If I'm going, I want to go alone.
There are four of them, Matt. Why on earth would you want to go alone?
Because I'm that good.
I've heard you can track a fish through water. Is that true?
Sometimes. Depends on the fish, and it depends on the water.
Yeah, well, you may have to track these guys through water if this storm moves in.
I'll find them.
All right, let's say you do find them. How will you get them back if you're by yourself?
I'll get them back.
Damn if I don't think you can. I may be crazy for doing this, but I hereby deputize you, and I'll let you go out on your own.
Thanks. I'll have them back by tomorrow afternoon.
Whoa, now that's biting off quite a load, isn't it? Tomorrow afternoon?
You're right. It might be a little early. I'll have him back by tomorrow night.
I'll keep the office open late.
15 minutes later, Matt rode out of town on the trail of the robbers. He had a week supply of jerky, an extra box of 44 cartridges, and a rain slicker worn over his coat. In the mountains, there was a distant rumble of thunder, suggesting that the storm to come would more likely be rain than snow. Matt was grateful for that. It'd be hard enough to track them in the rain, but practically impossible to track them under a mantle of newly fallen snow. Just after dark, the rain started. It was a cold, driving rain laced with little pellets of ice. Matt found a rock overhang that was large enough to give both him and Spirit a degree of shelter, and he prepared to wait through the night. The one-room cabin that clung to the side of a mountain was built from logs and chinked with mud. Carved into a log just over the door was a message left by the original owner. This here house was built by Jed Morton in 1839. Boone Parker had found the cabin, long deserted, about 3 months earlier. He laid in a supply of food, candles, and wood, specifically making this a place to go after the bank robbery. He even built a lean-to behind the cabin so the horses would have a place to stay. It was morning of the next day, and the four men had spent the night in the relative comfort of the cabin. The room was permeated by the smell of brewing coffee and frying bacon.
Damn, Taylor, that smells pretty good. You make someone a pretty good wife, if you weren't so fucking ugly.
Fug ugly.
Coleman, did you check the horses?
Yeah, I checked them a while ago. Boone, how long are we going to have to stay in this place?
Oh, probably till about spring.
Till spring? Son of a bitch! Are you telling me we have to stay in this cabin till spring?
Got food, coffee, wood, a place to stay out the weather. What's wrong with staying here?
I just hate the thought of being stuck here when we have all that money to spend. I mean, what good does that money do us if we're going to stay here?
Tell you what, Coleman, why don't you just go back into Kuchara and spend it?
Hell, Taylor, I ain't asking to start spending it today. I was just wondering how long we're going to have to stay here, that's all. Besides which, what if someone tracked us here?
Oh, now, that's not very likely. It's for sure that the rain last night wiped out our tracks so no one could trail us. We'll just winter here, and by springtime, things will have died down a bit and we can go on our separate ways.
If we hadn't killed that woman and the banker, the whole damn state wouldn't be looking for us.
If you think robbing a bank wouldn't have the whole state looking for us, you're crazy. Anyhow, she recognized us. I didn't have no choice.
She didn't recognize all of us. She just recognized you and Hennessy.
Recognizing one of us is like recognizing all of us. You want to go on, do it. Only the money stays here till we can all divide it.
No, I ain't wanting to go on by myself. I'm just curious, that's all.
Matt was sitting just outside of the small cabin listening to the men's conversation. What he heard was as good as a confession. There was no question but that these were the men he had been trailing. Pulling his pistol, he kicked open a door and rushed inside.
Hold on!
Hennessy started toward his pistol belt, which was hanging from the head of the bed.
Oh, Jesus, Lord, fuck me twice!
I could have killed you just as easily.
What the hell? Who are you, mister?
It's Matt Jensen, the one who killed Clay. What the hell are you doing after us? Is there a reward already?
I'm Sheriff Craig's deputy.
Deputy, huh? I don't see no badge.
I didn't take the time to pick one up. Get down on your belly, all four of you.
What? What do you want us to do that for? Never you mind. You ain't got to explain nothing.
Coleman did as ordered, immediately followed by the others. Matt reached back outside the door, then picked up the four sets of handcuffs. He tossed all four to Boone.
Cuff their hands behind their back.
Boone did so, then Matt cuffed him. After that, he marched them out to his horse, where he took his rope and made four nooses. He put the nooses around the necks of each of his prisoners, then led them back to their own horses and ordered them to get mounted. As Taylor started to get on his horse, he slipped, causing a pull against the neck of the other three men.
Be careful there, you dumb bastard! You want to break all our necks?
Once all four prisoners were mounted, Matt tied the end of the rope to his saddle, then swung up onto his horse.
Okay, gents, let's head for Kuchara.
It's a 2-day ride to Kuchara.
Well, I'll be damned, genius. And we better get going, hadn't we?
Hey, mister. When you gonna give us a chance to rest up a bit?
Boone spoke up late that afternoon.
We've been riding all day long without a break.
You can rest when your bloated corpse is dangling at the end of a rope.
Well, it'd be night soon. You planning on pushing us through the night?
If need be.
We ain't had nothing to eat since breakfast.
I don't like feeding dead men. That's just plain wasteful.
I'm so tired now I'm about to fall out of the saddle.
Tell it to someone who gives a shit.
Don't you be falling out of no saddle, Boone. We wouldn't be in this fix if you hadn't shot that old woman and the bank teller.
Shut up, Hennessy. You was plenty ready to spend the money.
All of you shut up. Not in any mood to listen to you talk.
Now you can go on if you want to, but I ain't going no farther. Whoa, horse.
When Boone stopped his horse, Matt jerked hard on the rope.
Watch it. You can jerk me off of here and break my neck.
Thought you might want to get used to the feeling. Now shut the hell up and keep moving.
Matt pushed his prisoners throughout the rest of the day, arriving in Kahara around 8 o'clock that night, well after dark. The five horses plodded down the dirt street. The jail, like many other buildings in town, was dimly lit by a single lantern. Matt tied his horse off at the hitch rail and stepped up onto the wooden porch in front of the jail and pushed the door open.
You in here, Sheriff?
Yeah, I'm here. That you, Matt?
Yes, it's me. I got some prisoners for you.
Sheriff Craig stepped up to the door, then looked outside at the four men who were bound together by ropes around their necks.
Damn if you didn't say you'd have them back by tonight, and here you've gone and done it.
You men climb down.
Craig reached up beside the door. When he pulled his hand back, it was clutched around a greener 10-gauge shotgun. He pointed the double-barrel weapon at the four men.
Okay, you boys, just come on in real easy now. I've got a nice room all ready for you.
Sullenly, the four men, still connected by the rope around their necks, filed in through the jailhouse door. Sheriff Craig jabbed Boone in the ribs with the barrel of his shotgun.
Oh, hey, watch it! That hurts!
Not as bad as swinging by your neck till you're dead.
Matt returned to his horse and took the bag that had been tied to the saddle horn and came back inside.
Here's the money they took.
Don't give it to me. Give it to Mr. Matthews. That goes back to the bank.
All right. Tell Mr. Matthews if he wants his money to come see me in the Dog Bar Saloon. I'm gonna get supper and a beer. I love a beer, Paul.
The bartender, who was sucking on a toothpick, nodded without speaking, then turned to draw a glass, then slid it in front of Matt.
I heard you brought them four in a while ago. Is that right?
Matt nodded, then took a drink of the beer. After the long, hard ride, it tasted mighty sweet.
After what they done to Mrs. Foley and Frank Meade, I hope all four of them sons of bitches hang.
I expect they will. That's not for me to decide. That'll be up to the jury.
Ain't much question about it as far as I'm concerned. Jury will find them guilty for sure, and that's one hanging I don't aim to miss.
A tall, gray-haired man came into the saloon then, accompanied by Sheriff Craig.
Well, I'll be damned. That's a banker. You know, what time I worked here, I don't believe Mr. Matthews has ever come in here before. I wonder what brings him in now.
He probably wants the money.
What money?
Matt picked up the bag that was on the floor by his feet.
This money.
Damn! You've had a bag full of money with you all the time you've been in here?
Yeah.
He handed the bag to Matthews.
Thanks. I'm glad to get the money back. I just wish it hadn't cost Frank and poor Mrs. Foley their lives.
Yeah. Paul, bring me something to eat. I haven't had anything but jerky this whole day.
Bring him anything he wants, Paul. The bank will pay for it.
Yes, sir. And Matt, the beer's on the house, too.
Matt nodded but said nothing as he took his beer over to the empty table. Seeing a newspaper blowing down the street, Strayhorn picked it up and took it into the City Pig Cafe with him. Teach was already at the cafe, sitting at a table near the stove.
I ordered you bacon and eggs and coffee.
You gonna pay for it?
What? Hell no, I ain't gonna pay for it.
Then don't be ordering nothing for me.
I was just trying to save some time is all.
Save time for what? What have we got to do?
Well, nothing, I don't reckon.
Then don't worry about saving time.
I'll tell them to cancel the order.
Never mind, I'll eat it.
And pay for it?
And pay for it.
Did you buy a paper?
You ever know me to pay for a paper?
Oh, no, I just seen you with that one. I was wondering, that's all.
I picked it up when it was blowing down the street.
Strayhorn looked at the paper.
I'll be damned.
What is it?
They should have listened to me.
Who should have listened to you?
Boone and the others. Dumb sons of bitches had done been caught. Bank robbers caught. Trial to be held quickly. Rarely in the annals of human history has there been a crime so foul, a deed so dastardly as that perpetrated in this fair community last Wednesday. On that day, four dregs of humanity visited their evil upon this place by robbing the local bank and murdering Mrs. Emma Foley and Mr. Frank Meade, two much beloved Christian citizens. It is, however, with great pleasure that this newspaper can report that the cowardly desperados who perpetrated this foul deed are now in custody. Despite a summer storm which threatened to eliminate any sign, Mr. Matt Jensen, a well-known man of the mountains, tracked the villains to a cabin where, single-handedly, he made the arrest. Now, these scurrilous vermin, Boone Parker, Al Hennessy, Billy Taylor, and Ed Coleman, wait in the local jail for the appearance of Judge Aaron Heckemeyer to conduct the trial, which will send him to the gallows, and to an even harsher judgment than he who created us all will consign their miserable souls to eternal damnation.
In the same newspaper, Strayhorn also found an article about the gunfight between Matt Jensen and Rufus Clay.
What you reading that's so funny? They have jokes in that paper?
Jokes? Oh, this ain't no joke. But it is funny. Fact is, it's funnier than any joke. What was it Clay liked to call himself?
You mean ruthless?
Yeah, ruthless. Well, now he can call himself dead.
He passed the paper across the table to Teach.
Here, read all about it.
Shootest hurled into eternity. Fight over in blink of an eye. A young man with misplaced confidence in his proficiency with a six-gun met his fate when he engaged Matt Jensen, a man whose skill has been proven many times over. The young pistolier was named Rufus Clay, and it was reported by all witnesses to the event that it was he who demanded that their relative proficiencies be put to the test. With a challenge issued, both men went for their guns, and while young Clay was very fast, he wasn't fast enough and came in second. The ball from Matt Jensen's pistol found its mark while Clay's missile did no damage, save to a beer mug. Though Clay had no family nor friends to mourn him, his funeral and burial in Boot Hill on the day subsequent was well attended by the citizens of the town, who collected money to erect a tombstone for him, which reads, "To all who pass this way, my name is Rufus Clay. In a gunfight quicker than the blink of an eye, the other man lived, and I did die." That's rhyming.